Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Brandon. Quite the turn of events there at the end of the show in the main event. Randy Orton is the number one contender to the WWE Championship at Clash of Champions against Drew McIntyre. I think there's a lot to break down there in terms of the finish and in terms of how they went about just the whole evening in general. But we'll start with Orton. What's your take on him just regaining that number one contendership position on tonight's show?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been on the record pretty consistently when I've appeared on this show with Wade, just saying that, you know, I felt that Randy Orton is doing the strongest work we've seen from him in the better part of at least 10 years, I would say. And I think that the last few weeks have been a continuation of that. I thought that the match at SummerSlam certainly felt like the biggest match on the card on paper, and I thought that it mostly delivered by and large. And I think that he had a really solid match with Keith Lee last night. I think that moving him right back into the title picture makes sense given the way that the SummerSlam finish played out. Seth Rollins did not quite feel like he was really at that level right now, and he still seems to be embroiled in a feud with Rey Mysterio and Dominic, for better or for worse. And I don't know that they really want Keith Lee to be a challenger for Drew McIntyre. I think you want to build Keith Lee as a strong babyface. So I think Randy Orton was the logical choice. I think that we needed a second match in that series, and I think Drew McIntyre needs to beat him with a claymore. So I'm all for the move tonight for sure.
I am too. I think it was the smart play, and like you said, the logical play given what they set up, not just at, you know, in terms of the SummerSlam finish and what they did last week on Raw, but just, you know, there still seems to be you know, money on the table between Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. They've got a clear story to tell. I actually think we'll talk about Keith Lee here in a second, but the fact that he was involved in this match, it made me almost question that logic. Because if it would have been like Seth Rollins in the match and some other, you know, whatever, Kevin Owens or something, for lack of a better word, I think you just would have said, okay, Randy Orton's winning this, and this is just kind of paint-by-numbers stuff. But, you know, Keith Lee at the end there, he made a really nice run. I thought he had a great showing in the match. Clearly, he was protected in terms of the finish going over on Seth Rollins. And so I thought, even though Lee didn't win, I didn't think he was hurt much by the finish either, and Randy going over. I think it almost would have hurt him more to have to face Drew McIntyre in a babyface championship match when, you know, that's just not a good position for him to be in at this point in terms of splitting the quote unquote crowd reaction. So you take that and talk a little bit about your thoughts on Keith Lee tonight as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in total agreement there. I think that, presentation aside, so setting aside sort of the music and the gear, at least in week one, I think it was easy for people to look at Keith Lee and honestly, I mean, it was my first reaction coming out of – so last week I watched NXT TakeOver 30 a couple of days late. So by the time I saw the Karrion Kross and Keith Lee main event, I had already seen Keith Lee's debut on Raw. And the juxtaposition between those two appearances was really, really striking, seeing his final NXT match after seeing the Raw debut. And I say that because – on NXT, he felt like this fleshed out character with this, you know, he had established gear. He had this really established music, and they throw him on Raw. And unlike what they've done with most NXT characters, they shifted him into this new position where he's kind of playing the same role, but suddenly he looks a little different and they give him the most generic rock music they could find. And I thought that, man, this is a really bad indication of where they are slotting Keith Lee and what they think of Keith Lee. It was almost as if they were actively working to ensure that he didn't get over right out of the gate. But to the contrary, the booking of Keith Lee has really said the opposite. It has said to me that this is a guy that they're taking seriously, that they view as a legitimate contender. I mean, no one just beats Randy Orton cleanly unless they've got some energy behind them backstage. You know what I mean? Like, Randy Orton, I don't want to say outright boring, but for as monotonous as Randy Orton's character has been at times in the past, even then, he's not a guy that you just beat clean unless there's something there. So for them to have given Keith Lee the clean win last night at Payback, I think says a lot about what they see in him, especially given how effective and how much of a role Randy Orton has been on as of late. So I think that they for the most part continued that tonight. I mean, they continue to flesh out the gear a little bit. He looks much better wearing the tights again versus the sort of the flowy shorts like Samoa Joe that he had in week one. I still think the music is terrible, but by and large, I think that they're showing some real dedication to Keith Lee. And I think that tonight's finish was really an indicator of that as well, because they really could have had Randy Orton pin Keith Lee and get his win back and really diminish what they did last night. But they chose not to do that. They chose to have Orton clearly go after Seth Rollins for the pin. And I think that was really smart to protect Keith.
Yeah, that was really well done. Like Orton literally crawled over Keith Lee to get to Seth Rollins. And yeah, I agree. And I think you have to look like at the matches too. I mean, like the match itself tonight, a lot of that match, yeah, it was built somewhat around, you know, Rollins and Orton and some of that, you know, back and forth stuff trying to team up on Keith Lee. But Lee got the bulk of that match. I mean, his spots were the intriguing parts of the match. They were intense. He really got to one of my issues coming out of his debut on Raw last week was we didn't get to really see what he brings to the table in terms of his physicality and in ring style. And you got that at Payback and you got that tonight. And I thought that part of it really kind of, if you were, you know, kind of curious about, hey, you know, Orton going over here and Lee not getting the win, I think if you peel back the onion a little bit, you can see that a lot went right for him tonight, even though he's not the number one contender right now.
Oh, definitely. And I think it's why I think we're more justified like in critique of the presentation, just because they have been so good in every other avenue. I mean, there's no excuse for that music. Like, I think you get that NXT intro, and then, I mean, logically your head just kind of, if you've seen Keith Lee in NXT, you expect it to kind of give way to his usual theme, and it just gives way. Like, it's a rough cut too. It's not even like they tried to blend it. So it's like they gave him this music of a guy that they just threw on TV to lose. So I mean, that stuff matters. I mean, I know that they don't always pay attention to that, but I mean, for a company that's so focused on presentation and the way that these wrestlers look during their entrances and the way that you want music that can really connect with an audience, take, you know, someone like Shinsuke Nakamura, for example, I think to take away that from Keith Lee is really a hindrance. And I'm wondering if before long we get some sort of change there. But really, that's my biggest critique about the way he's been presented so far.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure we'll talk loads more about Keith Lee tonight. But let's stop right there, and we'll get to some calls. Before we do, let's set the table here on the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering WWE Monday Night Raw on Monday, August 31st, 2020. I'm PW Torch columnist Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be around later on the VIP side of things with a full breakdown of tonight's show with analysis on his Wade Keller hotline. And you can check that out by going VIP at pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear is pwtorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire. Brandon, great talking with you, and thanks for joining me tonight, man.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad to be here. Always glad to hop on these post shows after. It's always a lot of fun. So
Absolutely, absolutely. And we got the calls are coming in. So you can reach us on the phone lines, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Make sure to press 1 to let me know that you want to get on the show and make a couple points. But, Brandon, if you're ready to go, let's get to it.
Sure.
All right, we will start with 860-860. Please state your name and where you're calling from. 860, are you with us? All right, we will move instead.
Gentlemen, I apologize. Can you hear me?
Oh, yep. There you go. 860, what's going on? State your name
and
where you're calling from,
man. It's Jane Harper. Headphone issues there. How you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good. I didn't catch your name, though.
Jay.
Jay, okay. Jay, what's going on? What'd you think of Raw tonight?
I thought it was a decent show. I enjoyed the show. I had a couple of things that I wasn't a fan of. but before I, you know, bring up those 2 points, I think overall right now, the WWE is kind of on a roll. I think they may be hitting the right notes for the most part, because they're doing things that kind of make you talk, make people tune in, between Roman's heel turn and, you know, trying to figure out what Retribution is about, and you know, underground, they've got a lot of reasons for you to kind of be intrigued. So, but 2 things that I didn't care for tonight, and one of them may actually contradict what I just said, but Retribution. So I don't know how else to put it other than, like, I feel like they're dead to me. Like, I was hoping by the end of the show, after the Orton victory, I'm thinking, please go backstage. Please show us what happened when they were supposedly going to run after Garza and I apologize, Demi. I don't know her full name. But what happened, you know? And I get it in the context of it. Maybe it's more realistic to say, okay, the show ran out of time, so we're not going to purposely squeeze time in to go find them and figure out what happened. The show is over, okay. But at the same time, you have this story out there that isn't going anywhere. And I'm all for patience. I'm all for slow builds, but there's no consistency. Like, we don't know who the leader is yet. So what makes them say, okay, we're going to show up at Raw tonight. We're not going to show up next week. We're going to show up at SummerSlam. And why is it some week we have more numbers, or some weeks we feel like playing with the lights, but the other weeks we're going to attack? And we don't really,
yeah.
So I'm intrigued. No. I still want to know where it's going, but, and the girl ran away so slow. They really wanted to catch her. Like, they didn't even try. I guess they wanted to have her kind of like, you know, stir in her fear or something, like, we'll get you eventually. But that's my first point. I don't know what you guys think. How you feel about Retribution right now?
Yeah, Brandon. I mean, I think, you know, obviously I still – of the mindset of, yeah, okay, look, I want to know what's going on here. I want to know what's happening. What's the long game? Who's involved and who's not? And I you know, Jay, I'm like you. I mean, I can stomach, you know, long-term storytelling. I think what's the issue here with Retribution is that there is no story. We're not getting any kind of progression as to who's involved on a week-to-week basis. They're not changing up, you know, how they impact these shows on a week-to-week basis. It's the same stuff week in and week out for a good, you know, a good 4 weeks now, and maybe even longer than that, and many more appearances that if you count Raw and SmackDown. So I don't have an issue with the long-term storytelling. It's like, but they've got to start telling a story, period. And I think that's what's missing. It's just more of the same. It's monotonous. And then you put that on top of kind of the lack of fear and danger that they kind of put out there because of their appearances with the yelling and the chanting. It all felt so juvenile. You add those 2 things together and you just have kind of this cold, you know, just lackluster thing happening on your show. I can't even call it a story at this point. That's my biggest criticism, albeit I am still intrigued as to who's involved, if they can ever get there. Brandon, your take, go in depth on what happened tonight too.
Yeah. So I think that what we often hear as a sort of a critique on the analysts from people within the industry is that people critiquing these shows and people watching these shows don't really give enough time for long-term story to play out. And I think that is sort of a weak catch-all for very what's often very valid criticism of the way WWE tells stories. And it's that it's not that their diehard fan base doesn't have the patience for long-term storytelling. It's that they don't have the long-term patience for bad storytelling that goes nowhere over a long period of time. And I think that's what we are seeing with Retribution. And I think on the other side of the coin, you can point to a story like Sasha Banks and Bayley, which is a very slow burn, long-term story arc that by and large, critics and analysts are like, are very high on. So I don't think it's fair when people in the industry kind of say, well, you just don't like long-term storytelling. You have no patience, because I don't think that that's the case at all. So I think the criticism of Retribution has been very fair. I definitely fall into that category of I'm intrigued, but I'm growing less intrigued on a weekly basis. And I'll kind of explain why. It's not so much that I don't wish for it to be a big deal and don't wish that it's going to turn out to be a fascinating angle in the long run. It's that 20 plus years of watching WWE or pro wrestling and WWE in particular tells me that there are a lot of signs to look for when WWE is booking on the fly and looking to pop a rating and looking to do something that maybe they don't have an end game for. And to me, Retribution has that written all over it. You talk about, you know, publicizing the fact that a new faction was showing up on .com before they ever showed up. Like, why would they know that? Then you go to their first appearance, which is just knocking out the power and messing with some lights. Like, who cares? And then you just kind of go on from there. And every week, it's a different group of bodies doing the same thing. Their numbers dwindle and increase in size, seemingly at random, depending on how many people they need to attack or how menacing of a threat they need to appear to be on screen. I just don't think that there's been any consistency in anything that they've done with these appearances. So my thought is just at this point, like, this is an angle they introduced because they really needed to pop a rating coming off the, I think it was, if not the lowest, one of the lowest Raw ratings in history. And so you're seeing kind of these hotshot bookings, Retribution being one, Raw Underground being the other, that really don't have a direction or purpose. They're just there, and now they don't really know how to get out of them.
Yes, well said, and I agree. Jay, any comments on that? Or if not, move on to your second point.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing up Sasha and Bayley, because that was the perfect example of a story that, yep, I'm enjoying it. I'm willing to let it play out. And whereas Retribution, that was exactly my thinking, was they just put it out there without really having the in-game insight or knowing. And I listen to Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard all the time, right? And I learn a lot listening to that podcast. And one of the stories he always talks about is Hogan, Savage, Liz. You know, that whole Mega Powers breakup split and, you know, WrestleMania, I guess, 4 to 5 or whatever. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that's how you tell a story. And you know where you're going with it. And they just seem to have lost their way with that type of storytelling, where you kind of know, we know what, you know, WrestleMania is going to be next year, or we know where we're going. You know, they just put it out there and they may have an idea, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, it seems like, yeah, we just end up where we end up. So I'll move on to the next point so you guys can get some more callers. And I think, Brandon, you brought it up, I believe. Underground. It's kind of along the same lines of what I'm saying about Retribution. So whereas week one, I was not excited per se, but intrigued. Like, oh, this is different. It's fine. And we, I guess I'll say we, myself, whatever, you know, we look for something new, right? We get tired of the same old things. You want them to do something different. So I try not to complain when they do something different, even if I don't get it at first. I'm like, this is what we want them to do. But Underground, to me, quickly went from something different to just Raw in another part of the building. I don't like I'm not a fan of how much they are starting to kind of like intermingle like the storylines, you know what I mean? So and the way Tom Phillips and the announced team now is so heavily promoting to tonight on Underground, next week on Underground. Like week one, it was totally, it just, you know, this thing just popped up that Shane McMahon had. Week two was similar. And even down to the physicality now resembles what I'm seeing in the arena for Raw. Like whether it's how someone comes and interferes, or it has quickly for me gone to, it's just Raw in another part of the building, and I'm no longer, I don't know what, and I don't think it has an end game either. They're just going to probably keep having these segments in another part of the building at 10 o'clock for some reason. There's nothing really 10 o'clock-ish about it other than it's dark or something. I don't know. But to me, I think it's lost its appeal of being different from Raw.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that, I think. I mean, I think one of the things that it needs, and I've said this since the onset, is it needs some sort of context behind it. Like, why is it important? And for weeks now, we haven't had that definition around it whatsoever. Not any words from Shane McMahon. We don't know what, you know, they're fighting for, even if it is just money and pride. And I think what you're starting to see is it just become kind of this area for this the low card, mid card guys at best to go and kind of almost just like rejuvenate themselves after a whole bunch of losses, right? I mean, Apollo Crews is losing. Okay, now he's going into Raw Underground. He's going to try to reestablish some credibility. I don't like tonight how you had the Iconics out there. I mean, that visual just doesn't line up with what Raw Underground is supposed to be, even without any context. Even if you just stipulate to the fact that, hey, Raw Underground is this. I mean, the Iconics, really? I mean, I think, you know, that's a bad call, and to me seems like a last minute decision to kind of, oh, this will be funny. Let's throw Billy Kay into Raw Underground and see what will happen. And I really think if they're not careful, they're gonna the small bit of intrigue that Raw Underground had for a lot of fans up to this point, and maybe still does have, it's gonna disappear quickly if they don't, you know, put some parameters around this thing and actually make it mean something. Brandon, to you.
Yeah. So I was actually on the post show the night that Raw Underground debuted, and so I was, you know, I was obviously asked to give kind of a hot take first impression, and my opinion was decidedly more negative than I think a lot of people's was, so much so that I thought, like, maybe I'm being a little too hard on it. In hindsight, I sort of have almost doubled down. I'm not, like, actively angered by it. I mean, there's bigger problems with these shows on a week-to-week basis, but I don't think it's helping anybody. I don't think that it's serving any real purpose. And really, I think that the intended purpose of the show has sort of fallen by the wayside. Because to me, aside from being a vehicle to get Shane McMahon back on TV on a weekly basis, to me, Raw Underground felt like an excuse to shake up the formatting of a three-hour Raw being presented in the Performance Center with 10 NXT guys in the audience. Like, it felt like a way to shift the visual aesthetic of the show, even just temporarily, to try to break up the monotony of this really sort of sad setting that they had themselves in at the Performance Center. And with the introduction of the Thunderdome, it feels to me like the need for that has kind of gone away, almost in the same way that we didn't see any cinematic matches at SummerSlam or at Payback. And I think that's by design, because I think that they feel less inclined to rely on a crutch like that to get them through this era now that they feel they have their state-of-the-art production back. Even if it's different, it is still, you know, up to their standards in terms of the physical presentation of the show. I think Raw Underground was sort of a manifestation of their sort of insecurity about the way that the show looked in the Performance Center and them just wanting to break up that monotony. So now there just seems less of a reason for it to be there. But again, similar to Retribution, I just don't know that they know how to get out of it, short of just forgetting it existed. And I'm not even sure that's a terrible idea, to be honest, because I just don't think it's made any impact one way or the other. And to point to a specific example of that, Dolph Ziggler's been pretty impressive on Raw Underground, but that doesn't translate to any success in the actual pro wrestling ring on Raw proper. I mean, you saw Ziggler win most of his quote-unquote matches on Raw Underground and submit a bunch of guys, but when it came time to getting in the ring with Keith Lee tonight, it was, you know, it wasn't a squash, but it was pretty close. Mm-hmm. So I don't see, like, Dolph Ziggler hasn't been helped by appearing on Raw Underground. He hasn't been rejuvenated. In fact, I think this was the first time Ziggler has appeared on Raw proper since Underground was introduced, and I'm not sure that that's helpful to these characters either, if they're only being used on Underground and then Raw sparingly.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there was an argument to be made when it started off, and that, hey, this could be used as an avenue to get a new star over. Because when it started, there was nobody in there that you recognized. And right. Now it's filled with Dolph Ziggler, and it's filled with Shayna Baszler was in there for a little while. Tonight we had the Hurt Business, Cedric Alexander, Apollo Crews, and Ricochet. And it's like, those are the guys that you know are going to cross over. I think this can work. I mean, I think it could work if you want to say, all right, we're going to take the time here on this show. It's going to look different. It's going to keep Raw a little bit fresh for a few segments here and there in the third hour. And we're going to try to get someone over. Is this guy going to be, you know, a main event level WrestleMania attraction? Maybe not. Maybe he's going to be a mid-card guy on Raw, but at least there's a reason for it. At least there's a reason for people to maybe tune in to the Raw Underground segment. Now it's just another area for, you know, these mid-carders to exchange wins back and forth. And I think it comes down to that definition. They don't have it. They didn't have it week one, as you pointed out, Brandon. And they still don't have it today. And so it just kind of floats there.
Yeah, and I think my one maybe cause for a little optimism or hope that they could turn it around after week one was just, you know, you have to give them a pass to some extent. It's week one. Maybe they don't want to put all their cards on the table in week one. Maybe in week two or week three, Shane McMahon is going to explain exactly what the purpose of Raw Underground is. And maybe it means a Raw proper contract for one of these undiscovered unknown guys. Maybe it means transitioning into a title shot. Maybe it means I don't know. I mean, any number of things, but there has to be a tangible reason for this to exist. Otherwise, it's just pro wrestling without ropes. Because I get that that Shane was pushing this narrative that there were no rules, but really nothing that's been done on Raw Underground is anything that banned in a WWE ring. It just looks a little more vicious because they're selling an amateur style. There's no reason that you couldn't lift any of those guys into the ring on Raw proper and have them do the exact same thing. There's nothing different about it.
Yeah, right. Today in the main event, Keith Lee got backdropped on a announcer's table.
Yeah.
Match kept going. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Jay, anything else for us tonight before we move on?
I'm sorry. Just before I go, I'm so glad you said that. As I watched Payback last night, for years, I've thought about, like, why is it – well, I don't know that I've thought about it for years, but recently, right? I'm thinking – you pull the table out from under the ring and it's a DQ, but why can we use the announce table? And yeah, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys go on that point.
I appreciate it. If it's visible at ringside and you don't physically pick it up, you can use it, is how I've told myself for many years now.
Yes. Oh, the blinders we put up to be pro wrestling fans.
Yeah.
Surely.
Hey, Jay, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Good night.
All right, we will move on from there. We'll go to a Skype call. Skype, if you hear the beep, this is you. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Valentin from Rush.
Valentin, how are you, my friend? What do you think of Raw tonight?
Yeah, I want to talk about Aleister Black because to me, he just feels pathetic. Rollins and Murphy beat him up and injured his eye. Then he returned and attacked Kevin Owens for some reason, who did nothing to him. And tonight he did it again because Randy Orton asked him. Like, I don't know if his heel turn really works for me.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad this topic came up because I was thinking the same thing about for a lot of reasons. And I think there's a lot to digest with this one. So good topic, Valentin. Yeah, Brandon, I'll throw to you since you had that initial reaction there. Your take on Black tonight, and then I guess just the heel turn in general. Go ahead with the first take.
Yeah, I've been sort of pounding the table for Aleister Black on this show for as long as I've been doing this show. I think I see so much upside in that guy, and I really thought that once he got some exposure on the main roster and got some solid matches under his belt that he could be a really big player. And I don't necessarily think that this precludes him from still doing so, but I just hate that he got mixed up in the Seth Rollins stuff. I feel bad that a bunch of guys have to sell losing an eyeball now just because of a weird angle that they had to play out with Seth Rollins. Like that's gonna haunt Rey Mysterio for the rest of his career in WWE. And now it appears like they're going to handicap Aleister Black for a while with it too. And I don't know if the heel turn was necessarily the right move. I think that Black is such a badass in the way that he wrestles that his style just naturally gravitates toward being a babyface because he just looks so damn cool doing what he does. But maybe it works. I don't like the out of nowhere attack on Kevin Owens. And I also don't like this being his first program as a heel either, specifically because I think it puts them in the classic WWE conundrum that they often find themselves in with guys like Bray Wyatt, which is you pair two guys together who really desperately need to win a feud and only one of them can. And I think that is very true for both Aleister Black and Kevin Owens right now.
Yeah, I agree. There's just a couple of things with this that just don't really add up. I mean, for one thing, he had so much more to do as a babyface. I mean, you had this storyline right there ready to go between him and Seth Rollins that was still on the table. And yeah, even if you just put the eye silliness aside, which I agree with you on, Brandon, but you still had this moment where Aleister Black could take a couple steps up the card and have, you know, maybe a 2-3 match program with Seth Rollins, and one that would have logically made a lot of sense. You set the table for it. You started, you know, the story with him being kind of a confidant of Rey Mysterio and the guy out there fighting the good fight for his mentor. And then he got hurt, and now he's primed for that comeback at some point to have that Seth Rollins view. I mean, that was just, you know, you don't see that kind of booking all the time in WWE, and they had that there on the table. I agree with you fully, wholeheartedly on him stylistically in the ring, it being more along the babyface lines of things than on the heel line of things. And that's not just because of his presentation in terms of his entrance, the way he walks to the ring, the darkness. I think all that obviously skews babyface, but is his moveset too. I mean, the Black Mass is such a, not that you can't pull it off as a heel, but it's just so intense and such a quick hit that it screams babyface to me. You know, it's like, you know, the RKO in a lot of ways. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. Randy Orton can pull it off as a heel, but man, that thing's going to get a pop every time because it's such a cool move to watch, and he executes it so darn well every single time, and he can do it against anybody. So those two things are bouncing around in my head. And then the third is just the lack of, like we talked about with Raw Underground, the lack of context here. It's like, all right, yeah, this injury happened to you. You could come back and get your retribution, pun intended, on Seth Rollins, but yet you choose to kind of go after Kevin Owens. Like, why? I think we need to hear from Aleister Black. We need to hear just what the heck happened and what the heck's going on for this to start making any semblance of sense. I think Black is a performer that can pull this off. I think he's good enough where he can make it work, but he has to have time to walk the audience through that change in character.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's definitely going to be that disconnect for a while. And the thing that I worry about the most, just given WWE's lack of consistency in their storytelling, is like they often like to tag just team random faces and heels on Raw for any given reason. You know, maybe you have a six-man tag, maybe you have a tag that's just set up to, you know, sort of anchor two feuds going into a pay-per-view, whatever. I mean, in a month from now, are we going to see Aleister Black team with Seth Rollins? I mean, it seems very possible, and it just shouldn't be. I mean, in what universe would this character not want to seek revenge on Rollins and Murphy? It doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I think they have a lot of hurdles to jump over. I also just, in general, I think that there's reason for WWE to pay attention to the presence of certain wrestlers on social media. And I say that because it's impossible to ignore in this day and age the level of exposure these wrestlers have to fans on the internet and the amount that they engage with people on the internet. And I think that you have people who are really, really good at protecting their character and protecting sort of the mystery and the mystique around who they're presented as. And you have other guys that just really want to be themselves online. And that's great. And Aleister Black is one of those people. And if you follow Aleister Black on social media, he is one of the most likable people in that company. I mean, hands down, bar none. It's very similar to Kevin Owens, who I think has made himself nearly a permanent babyface with his social media presence. It's not disqualifying. I don't think that Kevin Owens could never be a heel again, for example, or that Aleister Black can't pull off being a heel. But I do think it's something that WWE should be mindful of, and maybe it's the wrestlers who should be more mindful of it, because sometimes it's hard to walk that line. I think you saw it happen with Alexa Bliss, who played this heel character for such a long time, and the fans started to naturally cheer for her, not only because of how good she was at her job, but because they saw how likable she was on social media.
Yeah, really good point. Really good point. And Black is just incredibly likable on social media. It's hard once you know that to kind of buy into his heel character, especially if he's not on TV each week talking about the new direction. Yeah, Valentin, back to you. You can comment on what we mentioned, or toss a different topic out.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. My second topic is Iconics. Like, why does we need to break them up, and why such stipulation even exists?
Yeah, that was quite the moment. I almost double-taked back. I was like, wait a minute, what now? And I kind of toggled it back a couple clicks on the old YouTube TV to kind of hear that announcement again, that all of a sudden they're, you know, if you lose this match, you have to break up. And so we'll get to the Iconics in a minute. But the first thing I thought was, man, does Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, I mean, how much can they possibly care that they have to break up at this point when they literally just got on the same page like a week ago, you know? And so, gosh, that was just a classic case to me of just hot-shotting a random stipulation just to throw it out there. And I don't know the strategy behind it at this point. At this point, if you only look at tonight, it's almost like they went through that process and did that angle to just have the moment where Billy Kay just gets tossed into Raw Underground. I mean, which they could have done anyway. And it was just so out of left field. The Iconics, though, I there's rumblings out there. You hear, you know, different news reports that WWE Vince McMahon is high on Peyton Royce. I mean, this could be an avenue to finally get her on a singles trajectory of some kind. I think either way, if she's a singles act or not, and this is just a story between the Iconics at this point, both of them, they need something. They need some added oomph as to why, you know, they're going to be important, because as singles acts, you can be as high on anybody that you want as far as charisma, but neither of them right now have any sort of credibility in that ring that will take them far as you know, being a staple of the women's division goes. Brandon.
Yeah, I think that this whole thing, this whole conversation involving all four of these women speaks to a larger issue with the Raw women's division as a whole. And I think you could argue the women's division in WWE, period. I hope we'll talk about the situation with Asuka and Lana and Natalya later on, too, because I think this also relates to them and Mickie James. I think this relates to them pretty strongly as well. But I think that to your point about Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, like, who cares if they get broken up? Because, like you said, they were just reunited a few weeks ago, and already I think WWE made a drastically bigger deal out of that than I think fans were really expecting. The segment weeks ago on the KO show with where Kevin Owens kind of facilitated the reunion between Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, it felt really overdramatic and kind of like oversold to me. I mean, it's great that they put them back together and gave these two women who were kind of floating something to do. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's certainly fine with me, but it felt like they oversold the importance of the Riott Squad, which to me was kind of a group that never really fully connected and just lost a lot. So I never felt like there was that real clamoring for them to get back together. So the moment of seeing them get back together didn't feel earned, in the same way that I don't think that tonight's situation was earned at all. I mean, if Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan were forced to break up again tonight, you know, does anybody really care? Like, and I don't mean that to be mean. Like, I'm just saying from a storyline perspective, we haven't really been given a reason to care about this tag team. On the flip side, the Iconics, I know that a lot of people find them overbearing and grossly annoying. And I fall in that camp, like, sometimes. But I also think that together as a comedic duo, they do bring something to the table. And given their performances in the ring, I worry about splitting them up, because I think the strongest aspect of each of their characters is the charisma they have with each other.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. And I think the charisma, I want to unpack that, because it's real. Like, that can mask a lot of issues in the ring when you have that going on. If it's just Peyton Royce out there, you know, it's on her, and she's got the other person across from her to play off of, and that's it. What's your take on a ceiling for Peyton Royce? I mean, I personally, like I said, I think she's got some charisma there. She's got a flair that, you know, you kind of want to watch her on the screen, because I think she does have a bit of an it factor, but I don't think it's kind of a lost it factor at that point. It's out there and it's around, but she hasn't, you know, really been able to define that down into a certain character or a certain act. And until she does, I don't see her as a viable contender for Asuka's Raw Women's Championship anytime soon.
No, I definitely don't see her that way either. And I think that is sort of a testament, again, to the state of affairs in the WWE Women's Division. I think more so than any other division and in any other time period, there's a very... The Raw Women's Division especially feels like a very clearly defined class system, where you kind of have the ruling class at the top, and that's your Asuka's, your Bayley's, your Sasha Banks, Charlotte when she's around, Ronda Rousey, of course, when she was around. And then I think you have the tier two who can be thrown into that title picture and make sense, but I don't know how much of a draw they are. And that I look to is people like Shayna Baszler right now, who really should be in tier one, but isn't because of the way she's been booked. Nia Jax, who sort of fluctuates between viable contender and sort of background player. You have people like Natalya, who is talented enough in the ring to kind of keep her cemented in that position, even though the booking of her character may say otherwise. And then below that, you sort of have everyone else. And everyone else in that lower tier struggles for relevancy and struggles for TV time. And often their TV time is short, and it involves losing to someone in tier one or tier two and losing in a decisive fashion. And that certainly describes Peyton Royce right now. So they've got to do a lot of work if they want to make her a viable contender, because I think the Iconics have just been defined down to an extensive degree, to a point where I think that you could bring a new character in at the in-ring level of Peyton Royce, and if you sold her as a big deal, you could make her a viable threat. But where Peyton Royce is in the ring, coupled with the character and the position she's been saddled with on the roster, I just don't see it right now.
Yeah, I agree. And my fear here is that I can totally see, you know, WWE providing us with weeks on and worth of skits of Peyton Royce and Billy Kay not together as a team, but like together as a team, trying to come back together as a team, backstage begging and pleading. And if, I mean, I can see that happen. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but you know, I think if this is a true breakup, you know, and they're going to go with these guys as singles acts, you know, something like that will severely hurt, you know, the progress of a Peyton Royce singles push, because it just further hammers home the fact that she's, like you said, in that third tier, and she's going to stay there.
Yeah, The reason I dislike this stipulation so much, and I, like you, kind of did a double take. I was watching, I think it was the opening match of the night, or maybe the second match, and all of a sudden in the corner they've been doing those sort of overlay graphics the last few weeks, and it says Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan versus the Iconics. Winner gets a tag title shot. Loser can't team anymore. I don't remember the language they use, but I was like, what? Are you serious? Like, where did this come from? And I think this problem exists not just in this particular angle, but WWE is ought to do this quite frequently, in that they think of something and they get set on an idea. In this case, let's say it's a singles push for Peyton Royce. So they've decided in a creative meeting at some point, or Vince McMahon has decided, whoever has decided, okay, we're going to run with Peyton Royce here. So we have to break up the Iconics, but we don't want to have them turn on each other. So how do we do this? Oh, well, we can force them to split up in a match. So now they've just painted themselves into a corner, because what if they want to rejoin it? What if the Peyton Royce singles push doesn't work out in a month or 2 months or 3 months, and they want to put the Iconics back together? Well, now you either have to explain away somehow this situation that you created tonight, or you just pretend like it never happened and you treat your fans like they're stupid and they have no memory. Yeah. And that's what WWE tends to do, when in reality it doesn't have to be that hard. They could have very easily put Peyton Royce on a singles trajectory and just had Billy Kay support her and be in her corner. And then here you go. You got a singles competitor and you've got Billy Kay in her corner. They're still the Iconics, but Peyton Royce is now chasing a singles dream. It's not complicated.
Yeah, you're right. And even if, like you said, okay, we want to have this match, and we want the Iconics to break up in this way. I mean, look, WWE's starved for content right now. They have to produce weekly stuff that's important every single week. So why not, you know, work to get a number out of this, have some promos week in and week out. And this match, let's say this is going to take place in 4 weeks, have Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan talk about why they're such a great team, why they need to be the other. Same thing with the Iconics. What does it mean to them? You know, go through that. And not only does it tell a better story, but it gives Monday Night Raw as a show meaningful material that can, you know, increase fan investment. And to just hotshot that today was kind of like, man, are you serious? Like that really got out of hand quick.
Yeah, it doesn't send the message that we're booking this show on the fly. Everybody, hold on to your pants. And that's the message that they send. And like, that's not good for anybody.
No. Valentin, anything else for us tonight?
No, that's all I had. Yeah, I agree with you, Zach. Like, that's what I thought. Why all of a sudden they need to have such a stipulation? If they have some kind of a story, like they hate each other so much that they want to break up other team, or you know, some kind of personal relationship between each other, like they have it with Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, but not at that level that we would care. Yeah, thank you as always for taking my call, guys.
Thanks for making it, Valentin. Great to talk to you as always. We'll keep it rolling. We will go to, let's see here, 410. 410, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Reverend Keith Bennett calling from Baltimore.
Keith, how you doing? And what'd you think of Raw tonight, my friend?
Well, I enjoyed the main event because there were stakes. The match with Keith Lee, Randy, and Seth, you know, it was high caliber. Once again, Keith Lee was put over very well by both Seth and Randy. Specifically enjoyed the high flying crossbody over the top rope where he landed on both Seth and Randy. I like the hip toss and power slam in the middle of the match, and he's just being built up strongly as a powerhouse. Now, granted, you know, we most of us criticize the entrance theme, and at least they placed him back in his wrestling trunks. It's just that they're covering up his belly by having the tank top body gear. But aside from that, you know, he's definitely being built up as a mega star. Getting back to my initial point, there were stakes involved, and I find that the majority of the three outs, they're matches with no stakes. Now, you had the three qualifying matches. We all knew that Dominic was not going to win. They wasn't going to place Dominic in a match for a heavyweight title shot. So that was a given. As Brandon so pointedly emphasized about the women's tag match with Liv and Ruby versus the Iconics, at least there were stakes. But as Brandon stated, you know, they should have built up to this breakup. I mean, it was just kind of odd, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, you're going to make a match with this type of stakes. And now, you know, like he pointed out, you know, in the weeks to come, you'll probably have segments or skits where they're trying to get back together. So I just think a lot of times Raw is written on the fly, and they need to have more consistency in their storytelling.
Yeah, I think you do get that sense a lot, and I think you can toss Retribution into that. You can toss Raw Underground into that. But the point you brought up about the three qualifier matches, I had a note to make sure that we talked about that. So let's use this comment as a lead into that. Brandon, what was your take on how they set up those three matches and just the concept in general to do the qualifiers and then do the triple threats all in the same night?
Yeah, I don't think it was perfect. I mean, I think that you want to have, look, over the summer, WWE was apt to do a lot of title match setups by just having a guy come out and say, I'm next to Drew McIntyre, whether they were deserving or not. And I think you saw that with Dolph Ziggler for sure. I think you could make the case that, you know, Bobby Lashley was kind of elevated out of nowhere, despite them doing a little bit of work in the interim, like leading up to that program. It still kind of felt like it was a little out of left field. So, and they even did the same thing with Randy Orton. As good as I think that program has been and will continue to be, really, Orton just said, hey, I'm next. And that's really not the kind of the way that I tend to like contendership to be determined. So as a general rule of thumb, I'm gonna say it's a net positive what they did tonight. Now, I don't think it was perfect. And the reason I say that is because you still had guys competing in these matches that really didn't make a whole lot of sense to be there. I mean, I love Kevin Owens, but Kevin Owens has not been on a roll lately. Kevin Owens, by storyline, doesn't really deserve to be anywhere near the WWE title. Dolph Ziggler, again, the last time we saw him prior to Raw Underground, I couldn't even tell you. And I'm sure when we did, he was losing. Dominic Mysterio, again, third match of his life, and he's got a chance to potentially compete for the WWE title. So to me, it felt like they set up these three matches where the outcome seemed like almost a foregone conclusion, more or less. So you mm-hmm. knew you were going to have Orton and Keith Lee and Seth Rollins, and that's what made sense. So there's obviously it's a net positive because you're establishing contendership and you're actually making guys work for it. But I do think there's something to be said for just throwing wrestlers in there who don't really have any business competing for that kind of title shot at this point in time. As far as doing it all in one night, you know, maybe they could have popped a rating by holding the triple threat off until next week. I think, Zach, you said you may have said it on Twitter earlier that you thought there may be shenanigans in the main event just because of the way that things were going down. Was it you that said that, or?
Yes, that was me.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So I knew it was someone, and I thought it was you, but I just wanted to make sure because I follow so many Torch people. So I kind of got that sense too. So I was a little surprised when they just went with the clean finish. But I think that they probably could have been better served by maybe putting it out a week. But I'm also not going to complain because I like the fact that they're setting up the challenger weeks before the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think what hit home for me was the fact that, like you said, Keith, that there's stakes involved here. And I like that aspect a lot. And I talk about it a lot on these shows and my other, you know, VIP audio shows that I do, that's such an important component of successful wrestling. You got to have the stars, and then you have to have a reason for putting them in the ring together. And so while I feel tonight they did kind of they foreshadowed the outcome of the three matches based on who the opponents were, just as you outlined, Brent, I think that's pretty obvious. But, you know, I'm less critical of that because they were fighting for something, and it was a pretty big prize. I think they could have taken this a week further and then allowed time again for Randy Orton, for Seth Rollins, and for Keith Lee to again give some credence to those stakes. If the stakes are big, we know that it's the WWE Championship opportunity, but put more context behind it and tell the audience why is it so important. Randy Orton, we get it from you, you know, but I think it would have been a really great promo, you know, a babyface go home ish type of promo from Keith Lee to talk about, hey, yeah, like I'm new here, but I've got all this experience behind me. I'm a former NXT champion, and I'm going for the WWE title now. And just cut that promo that is a mission statement. And I think they missed the boat on that by putting it all into one night. If that said, I'll kind of contradict my own point. And you know, you're trying to hold viewers for 3 hours. So from a business perspective, I understand wanting to set the hook with the three matches and then, you know, move on and have the big payoff at the end of the show in an effort to try to keep as many viewers as you can. So there's a lot of play with that decision. And I don't necessarily I think I'm a little bit more in favor of it than you, Brandon. But you make some really good points as to Dolph Ziggler and Dominic and Kevin Owens, because you're right. They should be nowhere near a title match. And then the last point I'll make here before tossing back to you, Keith, is, yeah, I was worried. I was worried that either we were going to get Keith Lee given his win back, or I just foresaw this environment where the match would completely break down. All three guys would then get the title shot, and it'd be some sort of fatal four-way match at Clash of Champions. This is a much better road, you know, compared to that. I think this, you know, when you have stakes on the line, and you want to condition an audience to stick around on a 3-hour show, you know, when you put that stuff out there, you want to pay it off. And I think, you know, they did that tonight for better or worse.
Zach, one thing that just kind of occurred to me as you were talking that through, I hadn't even thought of this before, but I think there's also something to be said just for the idea that you don't want to put your champion in the awkward situation when he comes back off of this from selling this injury, where Drew McIntyre comes back and clearly wants Randy Orton. I mean, Randy Orton broke his jaw. Like, Drew McIntyre is going to come back on a tear looking to kick Randy Orton's head off. So when that happens, you don't want it to be a question mark as to whether or not Randy Orton is going to get the match with Drew McIntyre. Like, Drew McIntyre is going to unequivocally want to face Randy Orton. Drew McIntyre doesn't want to face Seth Rollins right now. He doesn't want to face Keith Lee right now. He wants Randy Orton because Randy Orton tried to end his career. So I think mm-hmm. if if, for example, the idea is to bring Drew back to TV next week, which I think is probably pretty logical, even if he's still, you know, quote unquote hurt, it would make sense to get him back on TV. I don't know that you want the question mark of who's getting that title shot out there on the open. I think you bring Drew McIntyre back without question. We just know Drew McIntyre's back and he's coming for Randy Orton.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. Very good point there. It does make for, and I think it makes Orton versus McIntyre more impactful, knowing that that showdown is on the horizon too, when Drew comes back. Yeah. Good stuff. Keith, what else tonight, my friend?
Also, keeping in line with what Brandon just stated, it would be nice from time to time if the creative team would allow the challengers who are wrestling for stakes, for title opportunities, if they would be allowed to give promos, or if perhaps we could go back to the video packages of, let's say, Keith Lee's journey to the main roster, you know, how he had to fight, claw, and scratch through the independent scene for a number of years before even being picked up by NXT and, you know, now making it to the Raw roster, you know, or just saying, well, you know, I would like to be, you know, WWE champion because of X, Y, and Z, or I would like to be the United States champion because of X, Y, and Z. You know, get back to the old school way of promoting the matches. It would give them a bigger feel as opposed to the same old 50-50 booking, the same old predictable booking. You know, it would just make the show more enlightening and more fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always a fan of the promos. I'm always a fan of anybody, and really on any level, whether it's a main event feud or some sort of grudge feud, or even like low card stuff. I think what they've done a nice job, you know, in the U.S. title picture by having that. You know, you hear MVP talk weekly about the importance of the United States Championship. Same thing with Bobby Lashley. Same thing with Apollo Crews. And if you do that enough, you know, eventually, like, you get to the point where, yeah, the United States title is not, you know, the main coveted title on Raw, but it's important. And I think people care more about it because you've talked it up and because all those guys have promoted around it, you know, throughout the last 4 weeks. So, I certainly agree with that. Anything else, Keith? Appreciate the call.
No, thank you so much, and continue to do a great job, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks very much. All right, we'll keep it rolling here with 703. 703, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. My name is Joe. I'm calling from Northern Virginia. I'm a VIP member for almost 10 years now. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for the VIP membership. We appreciate it. What did you think of Monday Night Raw tonight?
Raw, I mean, I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. I kind of know what I'm getting with Raw, and I kind of felt that way tonight. It was Raw. I actually wasn't even gonna was listening. I wasn't gonna comment, but I kind of wanted to piggyback on one thing you guys were saying earlier, and then kind of post something else or posit something to you guys. Secondly, first I want to talk about the Aleister Black. If we can revisit the Aleister Black heel turn, I just wanted to add in, like, there's it. If you listen to The Fix with Todd Martin on VIP, he often brings up the fact that you shouldn't book the wrestlers against what the fans want. And I feel like WWE is forcing this heel turn with Aleister Black, which you guys kind of talked about. I just don't buy him as all of a sudden being like hateful towards Kevin Owens for getting his eye, did damaged or whatever. And I think they're really fighting what, like you guys said, like, we don't want to boo Aleister Black. And I don't get the point of why they all of a sudden feel like he needs to be a heel on the show. I think they've underutilized him on the main roster, and I just kind of wanted to back up what you were saying before. There's no reason for this guy to be a heel. He needs to be kind of a loner, stands up for what's right if he wants to, but if not, big deal. But that turned me off so much last week when he turned heel, like quote unquote turned heel.
Yeah.
I think it's so stupid, and I think it's just a waste of him. And if there were crowds live right now, they're not going to boo him. So I think the fact that they're doing this is it's just counter to the flow of his own momentum. I know you guys already kind of spoke to that, but I don't know if you had anything more to say about that.
One thing that just popped into my head when you mentioned, you know, okay, you got all these things going against why you would turn Aleister Black heel. He's just got a presentation and a look that screams babyface. His moveset in the ring screams babyface. The fans, you know, if there were fans, you certainly wouldn't get the sense that they would turn on him, you know, as a babyface that they didn't believe in. When there was fans back in February and March, that wasn't the case. You know, he had them fully, you know, on their side for the most part, even though he wasn't, you know, a top guy or anything like that yet. So I guess the one reason that pops into my head is, okay, why do this is maybe Drew McIntyre. You know, maybe they're trying to build Aleister Black into a heel that can square off against Drew. I mean, Drew, once he gets through Randy Orton here, the top heels on the Raw roster are kind of few and far between at this point in terms of who guys that he hasn't faced already. I mean, he's been with Seth Rollins, he's faced Bobby Lashley, now he has Randy Orton, and yes, there's a superstar shakeup coming up, but I almost wonder, Brandon, if this is an avenue to that at some point where Vince McMahon got a little desperate and said, man, we need bodies to go up against Drew McIntyre. All right, Aleister Black, have at it.
I mean, I sort of hope that's the case. I want to believe that cream rises to the top and so that this is the start of something bigger for Aleister Black. I think I need to see it actually play out before I get my hopes up, just because of sort of the way that he's been treated thus far. And that's not to say that, you know, he hasn't been booked strongly when he's been a focal point. It's just that the moments of him being a focal point have been few and far between. I do definitely agree, though, that, you know, if these shows were playing out in front of live audiences, that they may not get the reaction that they want. And I think that's true for a lot of what they're doing right now. The thing is that for the first time ever, WWE really doesn't have to even pretend to listen to the fans because they can't hear them. So it's a really interesting conundrum. You kind of wonder, you know, we often criticize that they don't listen to their audience, but now that they don't really have their audience to feed off of, I wonder if they're almost sort of missing that direction a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think they are. I mean, just that's a, you know, whether you listen to the audience or not, like they're there to give feedback. It's like one of the, you know, interesting forms of entertainment in that way, where you get that real time feedback that impacts what you present on a weekly basis. And they're kind of, you know, shooting in the dark, whether or not they use that feedback or not. Hey, that's a different kind of a different conversation. But I think it's a huge missing piece, even for Vince McMahon, who, you know, who likes to go to war with his fans. You know, it's still a big missing part of the equation. Joe, what else?
Oh, okay. I agree with you guys there. I think it's a mistake. We'll see what happens. I think they misuse a lot of people who came up from NXT as whatever their direction was. But I don't know how you mess up Aleister Black. But I feel that way about a lot of the people that came up through there. But why are we going off here?
The one thing I'll say is, I think, you know, you can look at especially with NXT call-ups, you know, recently. You know, you look at the Baileys of the world, and I think even Kevin Owens and Finn Balor probably fall into this category. You know, they all seem to kind of hit the main roster with a lot of fanfare and then kind of fizzle a little bit. And I think that Aleister Black, I don't think he hit the roster with as much hype as those other guys did, because he kind of just got folded in with that in that tag team with Ricochet. But the corresponding fizzle didn't really happen either, you know? So I think he was one of the rare exceptions of NXT call-ups that was still kind of there for the taking if WWE wanted to go with it. And instead they went this direction.
Yeah. I agree with you there. I guess we'll see what happens with him. I still think, like, he's not a huge, he's like average sized guy, but with really like a badass moveset and just a really cool, everything about him is just cool. And I think they're going to be fighting against the Tide, which I think Vince McMahon just, it's kind of his thing, but we'll see what happens with him. I'm going to turn heel now on probably a lot of people. Because I want to talk about.
There we go.
You were kind of talking about Natalya, and her role in Raw tonight, and I just, it's something that I've felt for years, and I'll just bring it up here. I don't get how Natalya is considered one of the great workers of the women's division in WWE. I think she has enough of a history of blowing spots and just being a slow and a lack of being dynamic in the ring. I don't get why she gets this this praise for her matches. If you even going back to her match with Charlotte back in NXT in the women's title tournament. Which that's a match that I think is praised pretty much by everyone. And I remember watching it thinking her wrestling IQ is not right. And I specifically remember when she was doing the reversal of the figure four with Charlotte in that match, she would like roll over back onto where she was back on her back receiving the figure four. She rolled all the way through, and then for some reason it was considered like she was now in control of the move, even though she was basically just back in the figure four. And it's not just that. There's times where she's forgotten how to use, like, how to apply the sharpshooter in matches. There's times where she's just missed spots. And I just don't get this seemingly unanimous praise for her. I think she has a lot of weaknesses as a worker. I don't mean to crap on her as a person or as a wrestler. I just don't think that her respect level that she seems to garner from a lot of from you guys. I mean, I don't say you guys as a whole, but I just don't think she's ever lived up to what she in the ring is. I don't think she's ever lived up to what the praise that she gets. So when you're putting her in that tier of workers, I think WWE has many workers that are above her by far. And it's just kind of odd to me that she seems to get a pass for a lot of these things. I don't know. Am I off on that? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I feel like I'm out with you on some of it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there'll be a lot of people that take your full point of view on it for sure, but I think some of what you say is valid. I don't know that, you know, you can't look at her resume and go, wow, yeah, she's got these 10 great matches. I think she's got more so a lot of good matches, a lot of just solid mechanical matches. And to me, that's her value in the women's division. And I think that's what people praise. I don't know that I would be an advocate for, hey, build the entire women's division around Natalya and have her just run roughshod and be the top star in the company on the women's side of things, I certainly wouldn't say that. But I think when you need to go to, you know, just a mechanical feud for an up and coming champion, like that's a pretty good bet. You're going to get a solid match. You're going to get a solid story. She can carry herself on the microphone well enough to do what she has to do. She's got experience in the ring and can work with a multitude of different people with a lot of different styles. I mean, she's the one they call, you know, when you got to train Ronda Rousey. And I think that's her value. And I think she's got a lot of, you know, B level work, C plus level work, you know, throughout a really long career. And I think that's the other point. She's been doing this just a long time. The longevity of which she's had and the opponents that which she's worked with, you know, puts her up a tier. I don't think you can just completely dismiss that stuff just because it's not all on the level of Sasha Banks versus Bayley, you know, at TakeOver Brooklyn. I mean, yeah, she hasn't had that match, but I think she's had enough good matches along the way where she's right where she should be on the card. And it's a carpenter for people who are running the women's division on either show. Brandon, which side do you take on this Natalya coin?
Yeah, I definitely think that I fall closer to your line of thinking, Zach. I think that the criticism is certainly valid. I don't think that there's anything there that, you know, you can take huge umbrage with. I mean, you can certainly disagree and talk up her work and her accomplishment. I don't view Natalya, like you were saying, as someone in sort of the vein of a Sasha Banks or a Bayley or anyone of that caliber. But I think that you can rely on Natalya pretty consistently to get you a solid match, and that's more than you could say for a lot of the women in the era that she comes out of. I think that she stood out then far more than she stands out now, but I do think that she's kind of earned her stripes and she is good enough to kind of hang with those wrestlers, but not quite, you know, live up to their level or surpass them. But I think she's slotted in the right position at this stage of her career. I don't think she is the kind of wrestler that you want to put in a big program and give a big pay-per-view title match to. Maybe, you know, when you're short on challengers, she can kind of slot into that B level pay-per-view challenger role. But mm-hmm. I don't really see her as a title holder at this stage of her career. I see her as an occasional challenger and sort of a gatekeeper for women on the, like, the up and coming women too.
Yeah, I think she, you know, and I don't know that what she's doing right now with Lana, I mean, that's not going to take her to the next level either. You know,
right.
If anything, it might even set her back
yeah,
a little bit.
Definitely.
What, go ahead. You said you wanted to talk about that. Let's make sure we get to it and let's get to it here.
Yeah. So really it just goes back to the situation with the women's division. It just feels like there are a lot of inconsequential characters in the division as a whole. I think that the Sasha Banks Bayley angle this summer has been so good and has permeated so much of WWE TV. And really, I think that's a huge credit to them that they've been able to stay not only relevant but entertaining with as much exposure as they had. I mean, lesser characters.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, people would be tired of lesser characters by now. It's really, really remarkable what they've been able to do over these last few months. And I think that the downside of how good they've been is how little attention has been paid to the other women. Because by and large, the people that Bayley and Sasha have been feuding with have been kept pretty isolated from the rest of the core group. They've been primarily working with Bayley and Sasha and working with them on a consistent basis. Of course, namely, we're talking about Kairi Sane and Asuka. So everyone else has been sort of cast by the wayside. And I think now that the Sasha and Bayley saga is sort of taking a new direction and sort of shifting into the next phase of that story, I think you're seeing very quickly sort of the deficiencies that the rest of the division has. So you take someone like Mickey James, who's a very good wrestler, similar to Natalya, is sort of a gatekeeper for newer talent. And on the surface, it seems like, okay, Mickey James should be a really interesting challenger for Asuka, and this could be a big match. But it doesn't feel that way, and it doesn't really feel like any amount they do in the next few weeks could get Mickie James ready for that program, because even Asuka, as Raw Women's Champion, feels second fiddle to Bayley and Sasha Banks. And it just feels like there has been such a honed-in focus on what Bayley and Sasha have been doing that all of these other women have felt secondary and in some cases tertiary. And it's at a point now where they're needing to put new challengers in front of these champions, and they're struggling because these women have either not been on TV or they've been being fed to the women who need to challenge Bayley and Sasha in the last several months.
Yeah, Asuka, I think she's at a pivotal moment of her title reign here. And it's weird to say since it's only a week old, a little over. But, you know, for the entirety of the summer, where I think Asuka kind of got hot as a character and as a champion and as a challenger, really this empty arena era that we've had because of the pandemic, she's been a positive part of the show. I think she's someone that has found her voice a bit, you know, in this environment. With that said, she's also been working with Sasha and Bayley pretty much all summer long. They've been tied at the hip. So we haven't been able to really see the new kind of Asuka flair and character and renewed confidence that's around her gimmick without Sasha Banks and Bayley. And now when you do, it did feel to me, I had the same type of reaction of like, wow, this feels a little bit less important without Sasha and Bayley being opposite Asuka in that ring. And I think she needs to step it up. She needs to step up her presence as champion to help, you know, get over whatever she's going to be involved with here. But they do need to pull together some credible challengers. I mean, even if they go with Mickie James here, I mean, talk about like topsy turvy back and forth booking. I mean, she's a positioned as a babyface up against, you know, Natty and Lana, and now you're going to put that babyface in front of a babyface Asuka. And I mean, I don't know who that helps at this point. So I think with Sasha Banks and Bayley not being on the show, and I think it was smart not to have them on tonight because they're SmackDown wrestlers and they don't have the tag titles anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a considerable drop in star power and just the element to care about what's going on with the Raw Women's Championship, which has been so big up until this point.
Yeah, I think the show definitely felt the lack of Sasha and Bayley. But I, at the same time, as much as it kind of hurt to not have them there in terms of star power, I think it was the right move. Like you said, I am a sucker and a suckler for them keeping the brand separate. And I think that WWE works best and has always worked best when they play by their own rules, even if the rules they set up are pretty ridiculous. And I think that keeping them on their brand is the way to go. And Sasha and Bayley no longer have the Raw Women's the tag team titles, so they should no longer be allowed to appear on Raw. And they appear to abide by that rule. So, I mean, it's a net positive for me, but at the same time, the show felt it. The show felt their absence.
Yeah. Joe, thanks very much for the great topics and for the call. Anything else?
Oh no, I pretty much agree with everything you guys have said. So yeah, I appreciate it. I do want to also say that the tag team breakup stipulation was incredibly stupid and forced, and I don't. Like, can you imagine the Mulkey brothers having to split up because they kept losing? I mean, come on. Like, you're going to team with who you're going to team with. That was so stupid. But, yeah.
Did we convince you that Natty is better than she actually is?
No, not at all. No, but I appreciate what you said. Like, no, you made good points. Like, I don't think she's bad. I feel like I feel like the praise for her is more effusive than she deserves. But and at the same time, I think Mickie James, if they had built her up for a few more weeks, I think she's far better than Natalya. And I think they would have had a good, even if it was babyface versus babyface like it is, I think if they'd built her up sooner, I think it would be a much more compelling matchup. I think she's really good. So it's too bad that they kind of just shoehorned her in, you know? So, yeah.
How dare you disagree with us, Joe? How dare you?
I'm like 99. I'm like 98% with you guys. Yeah.
No.
I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
All right, 443, and then we'll go to 305. 443, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, I'm...
Oh, I think we lost you there, 443.
That's Kyle.
Kyle, what's going on? What'd you think of Raw? Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah. And okay, so my topic is really just about the women itself, because something really struck me tonight, really, is that Bianca Belair hasn't been seen on TV for who knows how long. This was like a couple of weeks or so. I need her to face Asuka and take the title from Asuka at this point, because Asuka's champion sucks. I just don't like it. I don't understand what this woman is saying, and I don't like it. So I just feel like Bianca Belair she's the only, I guess, top star in women's division on Raw besides Sasha. I think, because I'm a Sasha fan, but more as a top star in the women's division is Bianca Belair, who should be the women's champion.
Yeah,
at least there'll be more situations going on with that. And then one other thing too about the tag team situation with Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott, and I kind of went dumb to face Sasha and Bayley last night. That made more sense to me to do, because they should just be the tag team champions right now and not Nia and Shayna. I just think that was a mistake as putting it on them, but I agree with taking the titles off of Sasha and Bayley to further that storyline with Sasha taking the title from Bayley. But I just hope that Liv and Ruby will take the title off of Shayna and that's not good at all.
Yeah.
And so it's not good at all for me. So feel like that should happen.
Yeah, some good points. Brandon, we'll let's take the Asuka thing first. We started talking about that. I don't know that an opponent is perfectly clear for her right now. I correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't say that Mickie James is definitely the number one contender, did they?
No, they don't.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, it's still up in the air who she's going to face at Clash of Champions. Is Bianca Belair someone that should be in there right now?
Yeah, I think Bianca Belair is a great potential option for Asuka, because she hasn't been defined down yet. I think that's a key in finding a good opponent for Asuka and for any women's champion right now, is finding a character who has not been exposed to the point of being defined down by WWE booking, especially in the women's division. I think that there's a lot of potential there with Bianca Belair, and I think it's probably the right move. But look, there's still four pay-per-views this year. I mean, they're going to have a lot of time to fill and a lot of stories to tell. And I don't really see, if Mickie James is in fact the next challenger, I don't really see that being a multi-month feud. So I think there's still plenty of time to get Bianca Belair into that slot and build up a match between those two.
I do too. And I think she's got so much talent, and I think she's got such a high ceiling with what she can do. She's really got the full package. I mean, she can work in the ring. She's got, you know, charisma on the microphone, and then she just has an overall presence about her that screams star power. And I think that's what you want. The issue I have against Asuka, not that it's a bad match or anything, because I think Asuka versus Bianca Belair could be a really good match in the ring and a really good program. It's just that I don't like the babyface dichotomy there right now. I mean, I think if you go down the road and you turn Asuka at some point, sure, then that makes a heck of a lot of sense. But, you know, again, I don't know that you want to take from Bianca by kind of splitting that reaction, making fans pick which babyface they like better. So I think you want to wait on that just for that reason. And at least got to get Bianca Belair on TV more regularly. I mean, the fact that she's not a key part of the show on the women's side of things every week is really – it's really a, it's a miss. And I, and yeah, you don't want to have her out there just to be out there. But to me, she's talented enough where you sit down and you make sure that you are writing something for her every single week to get her to that next level. Cause she's got that much potential. What about the situation with the women's tag titles? You got Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler. They won the titles at Payback off of Sasha Banks and Bayley. We kind of saw, was Nia Jax standing up for Shayna Baszler today in getting an Asuka's face, or am I reading too much into that?
Yeah, I'm torn because here's the thing. I thought that the pairing going into the match was kind of silly, and I thought that. I felt like Nia was struggling, and I think in general Nia kind of struggles on the mic to sound natural. I think whether she's playing a babyface or heel, there's something about the way that the cadence of her speaking comes off that seems very unnatural and forced, and like she's trying to act and she's being fed lines. I've never found her to be a natural promo. And to me, having Shayna Baszler work beside her has been sort of having some of that inconsistency and some of that sort of that lack of confidence rub off on Shayna Baszler. And for someone who was so confident and so good in NXT in so many different ways, Shayna seems like a different person right now, and not in a good way. She seems like a person who is not really sure of her spot. And it's no wonder, because she's been treated pretty poorly since being called up to the main roster. So my initial reaction is fairly negative on the team as a whole. But then you get to last night, and I just thought that finish was so creative. And I thought that it made Shayna Baszler not only look ruthless and powerful, but it just made her look so smart to use Sasha's arm to tap out Bayley. I just thought that it did so many things in one little moment, because it furthered the dichotomy and the diversion, the divisiveness between Sasha Banks and Bayley, and told that story and allows them to branch off into their own thing. And at the same time, it gave Shayna Baszler this badass moment where she just looked like the dominant force, and Nia Jax sort of took a back seat to her, which I think is how this should go. They've tried with Nia Jax a number of times. I don't think that there's been much success there, and I don't think that she has improved in any real tangible way over the last few years. I just don't see much of an upside there, whereas Shayna appears to have, you know, unlimited upside. So I thought that making her look as strong as they did in that match last night was a really, really smart move. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, being the women's tag team champion gets Shayna Baszler on TV. If that means we have to take the negative with that, which is her interacting with Nia Jax and maybe feeling a little less confident because of it, you know, sometimes you gotta have the trade off.
Yeah. I mean, well said. I think you hit most of my points. I mean, I think this is something that maybe can grow into something viable and a program and an act that's gonna be interesting to watch on a regular basis. I think the way it was set up was really, really just atrocious for a lot of reasons. I don't think anybody looked good in the setup for this, but you know, like we always say, you know, what matters is what happens in that ring, you know, when it comes time for the match. And I think at Payback, they showed that they can be a pretty effective team, but they've got to get like the kind of the high school bickering, move past that. I think that just that waters down the seriousness that both of those two can bring to the table, because it's unnecessary at this point. I'm with you on Shayna Baszler. I think there's something going on there. She lacks a lot of confidence, and I think she's just at a position where you really get the sense when you watch her that she's really thinking through what she's doing and not feeling it. You know, she's going, all right, I got to step here and I'm going to pull Bayley out of the ring, and that, you know, and I'm going to then make this move, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to, you know, make this facial expression towards the camera during the promo. And all that is okay, but it's not, you know, the NXT presentation where that was authentic Shayna Baszler. That's, you know, that's the woman you'd see at the grocery store is the woman standing in the ring. And I think that is not carried over to the main roster at this point in time.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's something to be said for wondering if